We're going to be doing a review for book two of Avatar: The Last Airbender. Like I said, we've been doing a review. We're going to each book before the live action series comes out on Netflix, February 22nd. This is our review. It's going to be our review for book two. We have a review for book three next week on the show Saturday, twitch.tv/afternoontune. Mm-hmm. Usually streaming every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, usually about 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. So if you want to catch our live review of it, you can do so. But yeah, so this is book two, season two of Avatar Last Airbender, the original series here. And this is all about, and this is titled Earth. So this is detailing Aang going, trying to find an Earth, master Earthbender there to teach him how to Earthbend. That's one of the elements he has to learn because it's the way of the Avatar to learn all four elements. He's already got air down, and he's already, in the first book, we already see he's got a waterbending teacher, Katara. He's got a teaching him waterbending. That's his master there, his Sifu. But now he's in search for a earthbending teacher. At first, he was going to go to King Bumi and go to him and have him teach him, but can't do that. And
that's very much the arc of the first three episodes of the season, which I think the show Avatar is one of those shows that it really did a good job of not sticking to one specific story structure, because the first season it was all about, we have to get to the North Pole. We have to find a waterbending master. And the first three episodes of the show, they trick you into thinking that it's going to play out the same way in book two. And they get to Omashu, and it's occupied by the Fire Nation.
Yeah. And this is the introduction this season of two really major characters for the series. One is Toph, for a lot of people, Toph, who is one of people's favorite characters in the whole series. One of my favorite characters, honestly. I love Toph. And then also you have the trio of Azula and May, and also Ty Lee, who is the trio that you see that in this season as well, was catching up with Zuko and Uncle Iroh. So Zuko and Uncle Iroh are officially banished. They are no longer. They're just basically done with.
It's like the Fire Lord basically like tolerated them running around outside and their hunt for the Avatar, kind of just sending them on this wild goose chase. But oh shit, the Avatar's actually back? Yeah, I'm sending my favorite child after him.
Yeah, I'm sending the one that can get things done. My favorite sociopath, you know what I mean?
Damn, psychopathic daughter.
You know, she's going to get things done. So, they're officially banished there. He sent his, daughter to basically, capture them and bring them back. When they found out that plot was going on, that's when they kind of are on the run. So you have a situation with Zuko and Iroh on the run. You have a situation where now there's a new group of people chasing Team Avatar. That is, like I said, Azula, Ty Lee, and May there, who are chasing them. And they're a dangerous force, really dangerous force there, and much more maybe ruthless than what we've seen from Zuko and Uncle Iroh. What did you think about the introductions of the character? We saw a little bit of Azula from a flashback sequence in season one.
I don't think we were introduced to Azula at all in book one of the show.
She was just in a flashback.
She was seen in a flashback, kind of at Zuko's Agni Kai, where his father burned his face, with just the most psychopathic smile on her face while it was happening. But here we get the proper introduction with her voice performance by Grey Griffin, who is one of our great voice actresses. And we see so much of, just by how she behaves and how she was, how we can infer how she was raised and how she was brought up. We can infer a lot about how dangerous of a threat Fire Lord Ozai is.
Yeah. And also she introduces us to also a different type of bending that we haven't seen before in the series, which is lightning bending, which she can also have lightning there, which is a secondary kind of almost bending ability that some people who do bend can have. Like if you're a water bender, you can also do ice or blood bending.
But we don't get into that until like next book.
But also with fire, like if you can be a firebender, the next level to that of being even more an expert level as a firebender is lightning. You can master that. So that's what we see here, what she can do. So that makes her almost even more destructive and more of like this powerful, even more than Zuko, as we see, because he hasn't learned how to bend lightning yet.
Yeah, and you also have Mei, who is this expert knife thrower, who's and you also have Ty Lee, who is one who's a circus acrobat, but she specializes in chi blocking. And the show did a good job of introducing threats to our characters other than other benders, because you know, these are two just like normal human characters that can go toe-to-toe with all of our main cast.
Okay. I was trying to I'm trying to pull up a picture of Ty Lee and Mei. Yeah, these are a little bit of sus pictures. I'm gonna try to find a little bit of some better pictures here, because a lot of these I don't think I can show on stream here. Yeah, maybe this one's fine. So I'll show this is Ty Lee. And it's interesting. So Azula, she's the only one that is a bender out of the three of them. Like you said, Mei Li is just an expert. They're experts in more in hand-to-hand combat type of stuff there. And so they bring other things to the table other than just bending, which I think is nice. I think that explores a lot of things differently there.
And even personality-wise, because while Azula is the more outright psychopathic character between the three, Mei is just kind of like this bored socialite who is really looking for a challenge, and Ty Lee is just this endless ball of positivity.
Yeah, and this is all three of them together. So Ty Lee, Azula, and then Mei right here. Another big element, like you said, besides searching for the Earthbender there, which they find pretty much early on, and that is Toph. In this, where they go to a fighting ring, they're fighting competition tournament of Earthbenders.
Yeah, it's basically pro wrestling.
Pro wrestling. You even have a character who basically is The Rock. He's basically
Do you mean The Boulder?
The Boulder, yeah, which is actually, that's pretty funny. It actually had like a wrestling
game. And so a fun fact, Michael Dante DeMartino and Brian Konietzko, they originally wanted Dwayne Johnson to do the voice of that character, but he was too big at the time.
Wow. Damn. Mm-hmm. That was a missed opportunity. He would have been beloved if he did that, if he came on Avatar The Last Airbender. Yeah. So you have that kind of going. You're basically pro wrestling, and they find this character, Toph, who, you know, by day, she's a princess of this very noble family, and the noble family that she basically is sheltered, kept inside because she's blind, so her parents think she's this little helpless girl. But at night, she's, you know, what's her name? The Blind Bandit.
At night, and in this tournament, she is, and I quote, that bitch.
Yeah, she's a badass. I mean, she's, you know what I mean? As the show says, like one of the earthbending teachers there, she's the greatest earthbender that he's ever seen, ever.
Her development is probably one of my favorite arcs in the show. And something that I love about it is that, you know, with you have a blind, she is, you know, this kind of very tiny, waifish little kid. And a little girl on top of that, but she's also blind. So there was this temptation to kind of, you know, have the world kind of coddle her. And that's very much what her parents do. But no, she develops a way to see using her earthbending. She's very daredevil in that sense, where at points the characters and also the audience kind of forgets that she's blind.
Yeah, she sees with her feet, like she, you know, very daredevilish. The vibrations is the way she kind of sees things. And they do make some jokes as far as her blindness kind of goes there. They do kind of take some jokes there. There's an episode where they're in Bang Sin Se, which we're going to get into why they go there. But it's basically a huge earth kingdom there that is heavily protected, or so they think is heavily protected. And so they go there, and they're trying to put up posters because they lost Appa. And then she's like, "Oh, what you think? I can't put up posters because I'm blind." And she slaps the blue one, and then slaps it backwards. She fucking the other way.
It's upside down, isn't it?
Yeah. So they do some funny jokes there with it.
Yeah. And one of my favorites is the library, where they try and go into this underground library in the middle of the desert that to find some secrets, some potential strategies about how to defeat the Fire Nation. And they're, you know, flying around an Appa, and Toph is the one that shouts, "I see it over there." It's just.
So it's some good stuff there as well. And then she ends up joining Team Avatar. She's the latest member there. So now, instead of three, it's four. And very interesting. Now you have two girls on the team there. Also, there's a little bit of friction there between Katara and Toph at first, because Toph is usually mostly have done things for herself, very self-independent, self-reliant.
Yeah, she's self-reliant. She's kind of a loner, so that leads to strife within the group, which I think is explored excellently in episode 8, which is the chase.
And what do you love about that in the chase?
With the chase, you have, you're taking all four of our characters. We have this this element of a new person joining the group. And we also have this just constantly ticking element of Azula, May, and Ty Lee chasing them in this like little tank.
Yeah. And that's also, it shows like with the Fire Nation, they're so technologically advanced over all these other kind of nations there, that they have all this kind of material and weapons. And yeah, you see them, they're just chasing them all day, all night, you know, 24 hours, basically.
Yeah, they are not leaving them alone. And something that works so well about the season is where book one, I kind of felt like it fell into the structure of, okay, we'll have an episode that is overarching into the main story, but we're also going to have like little week-to-week side adventures. And book two corrects that basically from episode 6 on. So basically from the introduction of Toph, we are getting this more serialized structure into the show, where every episode really leans into the last elements that, you know, seem like they're going to be kind of one-offs, end up tying back into the main story. Even the most episodic one with the library, it introduces two of the biggest elements of the remainder of the season, which is this added ticking clock of a solar eclipse that is, you know, taking away the Fire Nation's firebending. And also, Appa gets kidnapped.
Yeah, Appa does. And the first season had a lot of hopping around at different places. A lot of like them kind of, because you're almost discovering the world with the characters and kind of what's going on, because you had Aang, who was, you know, trapped for 100 years. You also have Katara and Sokka, who were in the Southern Water Tribe, who basically they're cut off from a lot of the rest of the world. So they haven't really gotten to see much of the rest of the world. So you see a lot of kind of them hopping around at different places. This season, you don't really see that as much. I mean, majority episodes take place in Bong San Se, which is the huge Earth Kingdom there. And they travel there to go to see the Earth King to let him know about, you know, the war, what's going on outside the walls there. And you see a lot of refugees are, you know, making their way to Bong San Se because that's what they think is a safe haven amongst all the kind of Fire Nation conquering all these other different nations. But you mentioned, yeah, Appa. Well, that's the thing that happens in the series. He goes missing, gets kidnapped. Appa does. And that goes to show you with this scene, when that happens, how vital a lot of these characters are. Because even though Appa doesn't talk, he's just an animal. He's a bison that they use to fly around. It just, when he was missing, like, you really felt that loss. Like, you really felt it.
It's like the show does a good job of making every character feel like they matter. Even the nonverbal ones like Appa and Momo.
Yeah, they do have really good personalities there that you feel it like. So when they're gone, you know, you really do miss them. And then, I mean, do not play around with him and that bison. I ain't love that bison. He love Appa, man. Like when he lost Appa.
Avatar Kyoshi's at the wheel now, motherfuckers.
Yeah, I mean, when he found out that Appa was gone, he lost it. He went full Avatar, man. He went into the Avatar state and went beast mode.
And yeah, that the show has a great pilot, and that's the one that really explores the Avatar state. Because prior to the first episode of book two, the Avatar state was just kind of this thing that happens with Aang, where he is at his most powerful, his eyes and his tattoos start glowing. And in this, we really understand what that we come to understand what it really is and how dangerous it is. Because if he's killed while in the Avatar state, it's gone. The reincarnation cycle, done. The Avatar will cease to exist if he dies in it. So it's adding this kind of deus ex machina, but introducing a mechanic as to why aren't we just whipping this out all the time?
Yeah, very true. And that's very smart for them to do that, like I said. You know, and also you do have something. I think this was in season two, not season one, right? Where they kind of discuss of like, I think it was with the Earth King, was it? One of the Earth people, where they're like, well, we're just going to have you fight the Fire Nation now. And then.
Yeah, that was the opening of the premiere of this season. It's like they go to this general where they are looking to get escorted back to Omashu, and the general is just trying to look, we heard about what you did in the North Pole. You defeated an entire armada in the Avatar state. So why don't we just trigger it and you go fight the Fire Lord now? Easy peasy, 100-year war over.
Right. Yeah. And you see that, you know, it's not something that it's, you know, it, you know, he's not like the Hulk. He can't just, you know, Mark can just kind of just like, hey, that's my secret. I'm always in the Avatar state and then just go there. You know, like, you know, he needs kind of maybe special incentive to do that.
This thing that relies heavily on his emotions. And when played with that, it basically just is this kind of blinding rage that Aang has yet to learn how to control.
Yeah. And we saw it a little bit in season one when he found out about the Air Nomad genocide. Mm-hmm. And we see it again here in season two, like I said, when he finds out that Appa's gone. Stuff with Bunks and Say. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I was very, well, when I was a kid first watching this, I was kind of, I was kind of like, all right, can we get back to like the main story? Can we get back to the bending and the fighting? But rewatching it several years later, I was impressed that this show was willing to discuss the topics of that Ba Sing Se is, which is this very much discussing the kind of evils of propaganda and the horrors of this very isolationist society that Ba Sing Se is under. Because Ba Sing Se, it's very much like Wakanda. It's like, all right, we'll allow you in, but there is no war in Ba Sing Se. We're just tricking the people, lulling them into security, and kidnapping and brainwashing anybody who threatens that peace.
Yeah, and you have the, you know, basically like a White House press secretary in GD.
GD.
Who there is no war in Ba Sing Se, which has become a big meme from the show there to basically say that.
Yeah, it's turned fucked up. Yeah, it's turned into, what are you talking about? There is no live-action Last Airbender movie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so hey, that's become like a funny meme thing that's happened. But yeah,
and, like, yeah, and you have one of the other villains who is a Long Fang, who is head of the Dai Li, which is Ba Sing Se's secret police, who I think is voiced beautifully by Clancy Brown.
Yeah, Clancy Brown always turned in a great mm-hmm. voice.
Yeah, there. And the first episode that's set in Ba Sing Se proper, City of Walls and Secrets, that was nominated for a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Animated Program.
Yeah, and that was one of the, I think, longer episodes of the season there, too.
Yeah, I believe so. And also that we also get the reintroduction of Jet, who we met in the first season. And something that the show does really well is bringing back these characters that we only meet for like maybe one or two episodes. It makes the world feel alive.
Yeah. And we also see a return, like bringing my characters come back. We also see the Kyoshi Warriors. They come back and make a return there. And we see that Suki there as well. We saw in the first season.
Yeah. Freaking Sokka, AKA the last Riz Bender.
Yeah, I mean, he's got qualities, man. I mean, like I said, Sokka, Zuko too. Zuko is also big. He's got a lot of women there. You also see like Uncle Iroh and Zuko go to Ba Sing Se there. And with this also, you talk about one of the better episodes of just the entire series overall. With the second season, we can see a lot more of them. And you see the episode Zuko Alone, where you see the backstory more of his childhood, Zuko growing up. What happened between how did his father, who was second in line for succession to the throne, how he usurped Uncle Iroh, who was first in line because he was the firstborn son, how that kind of happened. And you see more about that and you see more about kind of how he grew up with Azula and his mother. What did you think about that episode? It's considered one of the best episodes of the series.
Shit. It is kind of hard to say what exactly is my favorite episode of Avatar The Last Airbender. And Bender is, because there are so many potential candidates, and you could take like 10 of these episodes, and if you picked any one of them, you can make a strong case. And most of them are the Zuko episodes, with dealing with his backstory, dealing with flashbacks to, you know, his childhood being raised next to Azula, has very emotionally abusive relationship with his father, and this relationship that he has with his mother that was very much left a hole in him. And also this very interesting question of of, you know, try as you want to, you know, redeem yourself, regain your honor, you are always going to be the Fire Prince. He builds this relationship with this Earth Kingdom family, and he tries to save him without it, but he eventually resorts to outing himself as a firebender, as the Banished Prince. And that town that he just saved from these kind of abusive Earth Kingdom soldiers, they turn on him.
Yeah. And it goes to show you the reputation a lot of firebending people have across the other nations. You know, as soon as they say firebending, it's like, well, you're outed. You're a huge threat. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fascinating look about, because, you know, Zuko, he grew up as the prince of the Fire Nation. He was banished, but he still held on to and believed a lot of the propaganda that we see later in book three. He believed a lot of it. And this is him, you know, seeing the world and seeing how they view the Fire Nation.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing in his arc this season, about questioning all of that. Man. And really asking himself, what does he want?
Yeah. So you see the connection with this family, you know, that he's kind of connecting with, very Western kind of, you know, traveler, you know, going to these, you know, towns, and he's got to clean up the town. Very much that style. And then he sees a connection with this family because they lost their son in a war, much like how Uncle Iroh, that was the whole situation in Bang Sing Se. Like, he was about to do the siege of Bang Sing Se, and then he was known as the Great Dragon, and then he ended up losing his son. His son's name was Lee Tun, I think?
Lu Ten.
He lost his son in the war. And you see that how, kind of in a way, Uncle Iroh sees Zuko as kind of like, in a way, his other son, as close as they've gotten. And then also you see stuff even with Azula. Azula, she's fucking crazy.
It's that question of that we brought up during our review of the last Hunger Games movie. It's like, okay, was this person always like this, or was there like even a shred of goodness in them? And no, this bitch was always a psychopath.
Yeah, I mean, there's even the scene where her mother just looks and like, what the hell is wrong with this girl? Like, what did I give birth to?
And one of my favorite moments in the episode Bitter Work, which again, with season two of the show, basically from six on, it's banger after banger after banger. And with the Bitter Work, it's Aang starting to learn earthbending from Toph, and Zuko kind of struggling with a similar dilemma where Iroh tries to teach him how to lightning bend.
Yeah.
I know you wanted to protect me, but I need to learn more advanced firebending. It's like, I know what you're going to say. I should try to resolve things peacefully. It's like, no, she's crazy. She needs to go down.
Yeah. I mean, she's a threat for sure. Even though it's like, yeah, I mean, I guess you could say maybe she was always born a little off, maybe. But also, I think
we could go on into this conversation about nature versus nurture with a Fire Lord Ozai's children.
Yeah, but I was gonna say with her, it just seems like, you know, she is a woman, you know, in this dominated male society. Mm-hmm. You know, you see that she knows the history of the Fire Nation. She's the one that's actually practicing every day. But you do have a person
she's the prodigy versus Zuko, who had to struggle and fight and persevere. And I think that's why his character resonates with a lot of people today.
Yeah. You see a lot of that stuff. So I thought that was a great episode. I think Zuko alone was a really great episode there. And like I said, after episode six, is really a lot of great stuff after that episode.
It is nonstop bangers.
Yeah. And I was looking up some stuff about this second season. So apparently there was a lot of people who were trying to make Tong a thing. Like, they were trying to make it like Toph and Aang. Like, they thought that they made a kind of better pairing than Aang and Katara.
Yeah, I never once really read into that. Mm-hmm. I mean, because Aang kind of is more of a gentle soul, and Toph would walk all over him.
Maybe opposites attract. Maybe that's what people thought, you know. Katara, you know, she's like, people have talked about her and Zuko, you know, good girl, bad guy, bad boy type thing. Maybe, you know, maybe that's what they were thinking.
With the events of the final episode of this season, how they play out, yeah, that ain't happening.
Yeah. I think when, you know, seeing, because most of these episodes, like I said, Bong Sing Se, you see that a lot of them in the Earth King capital, them trying to meet the Earth King, finally get to meet him, finally get to tell him about what's really happening and what's kind of really going on.
And this dude is like, wait, what?
Yeah. Who does the voice for the Earth King? Because he sounded very familiar.
I'm trying to look at the voice cast.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hackless, Ty Lee.
He sounded very, very familiar to me, who the Earth King there. But when they actually, go to meet him and actually show him kind of what's going on. And great action sequence, by the way, too, when they actually have to fight through these tons of guards to get to him. And, you know, great sequences there. I thought that was, like, really fantastic. And this is already by this time they had got Appa back, which was a great reunion, by the way, when they actually finally do get Appa and after so much
long time. So, Phil LaMarr is the voice of the Earth King in the show.
That's what I, because it did sound very familiar. It did sound like him, a little bit there. I guess he hyped up his voice a little bit, hyped it up for this. Yeah, so it did sound very familiar. It's like I say, when Appa comes back at that point towards the season when they go meet the Earth King, it just feels like a member of the family has finally come back. Like they all embrace him and everything. You see, he's been rough road. I mean, he got trapped and he was in a circus being tortured and abused.
And something that I think the season does so well is like because from 6:15, which a lot of people refer to as one of their best episodes of the show, is kind of this just a slice of life vignettes of all of our characters going about through Ba Sing Se. You get a tale of Toph and Katara, a tale of Sokka, a tale of Zuko, Momo, and Iroh. And you have one of the most heartbreaking couple minute vignettes of television with Iroh doing these like little gestures of kindness to various people in the city before he goes into this meadow to mourn the death of his son on his birthday. And it was even more poignant because the actor who played Iroh, Mako Iwamatsu, he passed away just between episodes, episode 30 of the show finally aired, right when the library finally released.
That was a great final performance there.
And you also have this vignette with the tale of Momo, which drops the biggest bomb of the season, and that Appa's in Ba Sing Se.
I would say a lot of these animal characters, they add something to the team as well. Even like a little creature like Momo.
And it's one thing when a show does have these kind of like standalone vignettes, but it's nice that we get an episode where it is just our characters living their lives in the city, because we set up this this kind of time constraint of, you know, we can't meet the Earth King just yet. We have to wait a while. So let's, you know, explore the city, look for Appa. So we get, Katara and Toph having a girl's day out. We get Aang helping a zookeeper. We get Sokka crashing a girls only poetry club and having this world's version of a rap battle.
Yeah, he was doing his chevalier. He was doing walked in doing the violin.
Haiku battle.
Yeah, you know, haiku battle there. So that was pretty nice. Yeah, that was
And Zuko going on a date.
Yeah, that was pretty nice to see how kind of, it's like, he's kind of like Mary Elizabeth Winstead from Birds of Prey. Like, he's so used to just training and fighting for doing this one thing. Like, he doesn't know how to really interact with other human beings in a real way. And I thought that was, I thought that was kind of interesting there. I think that this season is stronger than the first season, just because of, I think, storytelling. I mean, we're past kind of the just introducing to the world type of thing. Now we're getting into a lot of like more serious elements of the show, a lot more of kind of what's going on elsewhere, and like getting into this war and what we're going to do about this war, the 100-year war that's been going on. The Fire Nation has been dominating. And, you know, the addition of, you know, seeing Azula, Toph, characters like Mei Li, and then also Ty Lee and May. I'm sorry, it's just May there. That also is such a great addition to the show as well, those characters.
And also having some of the best character development in this entire show, because Aang, I think, is really struggling with where the first season, I thought it did it really well in pockets with episodes like The Storm. The season two, it does a great job of exploring that guilt that Aang feels, having, you know, disappeared for 100 years, having allowed the 100-year war to happen. And I think it's done really well in the penultimate episode, The Guru.
And
that explores that really well, which also, this might have my favorite season finale, build up to a season finale of television I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. I mean, this was, I think this season is definitely cinema. I think a lot.
Yeah, this entire season is cinema because there are so many moving parts into the final like five episodes of the season, like recovering Appa, overcoming this conspiracy within the city, and Azula arriving in Ba Sing Se and setting up this coup to take down the Earth King. Zuko coming to the crossroads of, is he gonna go with his uncle or is he gonna betray that his entire growth through this and go back into chasing the Avatar?
So besides
which I think is this moment in the show that when I first saw it, I felt like angry because why would you betray his character arc like that? And rewatching the show now, it's like, shit, having that conversation about moving on with your life was real easy when that temptation wasn't around, when there was like the idea that, no, I'll probably never find the Avatar.
Yeah. And you see in the scene, like he's still kind of looking for him and thinking like that's going to make his father take him back and accept him back into the Fire Kingdom again and be the prince. And maybe it's a time to move on from that. And you kind of see the seeds of that planting here for the next season. So besides Zuko Alone, Tales of Bonks and Say, what's some other favorite episodes of yours?
I think this has the best, my favorite episode of the season is probably the finale with the Crossroads of Destiny, where you have everything culminating together in this very epic finale with this amazing action set piece inside the catacombs under Ba Sing Se, having this interaction with Zuko and Katara, where they explore this commonality between them and how both of them have lost their mother to this war, having Zuko finally make his choice as far as his arc this season is gone.
Okay. Any Great Divide type episode here like you have in season one?
The closest one I think to the Great Divide, I would say, is episode 5 with Avatar Day. I do like the idea of exploring this idea that, okay, while the Avatar is this well-known figure, there are going to be some haters. And I thought that was a very interesting concept, but it also has one of my favorite subplots with Zuko going back and donning the blue spirit mask in order to, you know, steal from people and provide for him and his uncle. And that has the biggest emotional payoff with Zuko deciding to go out on his own, which sets up Zuko Alone.
I think also this episode, you see that Sokka, you see his value more to the team in this season. And then with this episode and like Avatar Day, because he like plays, you know, fake ass Sherlock Holmes. And goes around.
But he actually builds a solid case only for Aang to completely fumble it.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really his fault, really, totally. But in that episode, like you said, I do like the concept of like with Avatar Day of like, you know, he has all these past lives with the Avatar. And then what if somebody, you know, who he wronged in the past life all of a sudden comes to him now is like, hey, you fucked me over. And then this was like his past Avatar self, Kyoshi. She had killed one of their rulers. And you're thinking like, yeah, you know, they're going to, you know, figure it out. It's like, oh, of course not. The Avatar wouldn't do that.
The Avatar wouldn't do that. And I feel like that would have been an interesting concept until Kyoshi possesses Aang and basically says, yeah, I killed that motherfucker. What?
Yeah, which I like because it shows like it's like not all the Avatars are like Aang. They're all
because every Avatar, they are the embodiment of the different kingdom that they were born in. You've had Avatars from different societies. You've had Earthbenders, Earth Kingdoms. You had Fire Nation citizens. You have Waterbenders be the Avatar, and the show does a good job of exploring all of those different ideologies and how they express themselves through the Avatar.
Yeah, and you know, her was one that didn't fuck around.
Kyoshi stands on business.
And this is Kyoshi. This is her right here. This is one of the more famous past self of the Avatar that you see in the series. Like it's Kyoshi, and what's another kind of famous past Avatar self?
I know they released a novel about Avatar Yang Chen, who is the last airbender, air nomad avatar.
Okay. And then I also, didn't they do something with the Fire Nation, the one that was right before Aang?
Roku. Yeah, that comes in the third book with the episode Avatar and the Fire Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, she's one of the more famous kind of Avatar past stuff that you see.
Yeah, because she was the one that, she's the one that don't fuck around.
Yeah, I mean, she was like, I killed him. Yeah, so what?
I killed that motherfucker. I'll do it again.
He was the evil guy. He was bad. He was a tyrant, a dictator. It's like, yeah, I killed him. Yeah, he deserved it. Yeah. He wanted to conquer my land. I didn't let him do it. And
even technically, she didn't kill him. She just kind of caused the little peninsula she was on to split off, and that became Kyoshi Island. And the dude fell to his death because he refused to back away.
Yeah. So, yeah. You could almost say that. He kind of did it himself. So this season, like I said, I don't think there's any, you had the first season, The Great Divide, which I thought was much weaker episode. Yeah,
this season. That was a weaker episode because, one, it takes the conflict and it's just over-exaggerated to the point where it's just silly in a show that, while very childish and very juvenile, it delved into that more serious subject matter that I thought it was handled much better. And even in Avatar Day this season, I think it's the weakest of this book, but it still introduces interesting questions about what the Avatar is. It has one of the beginning of Zuko's arc through this whole season.
Yeah. So what would you give two of Avatar?
We've already said this is one of the greatest seasons of television of all time. There's a reason that this show is I think beloved as it is today, and I think a large part of that is with how great book two is. If book one Water was this show Star Wars, this was its Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. Because you do see a lot of the villains making moves in this, being really
and the season ends with Azula wins. The Earth Kingdom falls. Ba Sing Se is conquered by the Fire Nation at the end of this season. Yeah. And Aang is on the brink of death. And it's kind of this emotional gut punch because Aang is told that in order to, control the Avatar state, he has to let go of all of his earthly attachments, including his relationship with Katara and his feelings for her. And he gives that up and is in the Avatar state. And we've seen this done so many times throughout the show. This is the moment where Aang turns it all around and he gets struck by Azula.
It's a very dangerous moment there. Like you said, and that adds a sense of danger with the Avatar state. If you die in that state, your connection, you're gone. All the Avatars, that line is in. That whole line is in right there. Which kind of adds to that. This is a great season. This is cinema for sure for this season of Avatar Last Airbender. I do like it. I think it's an improvement over season one, which all season one was already really great. I think this really improves upon that.
Yeah, season one, while great on its own, it had a lot of the same problems that a lot of first seasons of television do, where it spends a long time trying to find the voice of what is this show going to be.
And I think it's with a second season settle into what it wants to be. You have a lot fleshed out more
characters. Flesh out the characters, flesh out the world more, eschew the structure of the previous season and add something completely new. Go into that more serialized format.
Absolutely. And seeing more of the backstory between Zuko, between Azula, introducing kind of these characters. Toph, for instance, example there, really good, well done there, introducing new characters. And Toph really feels really good as a part of a new member of the team, which was, I thought, great addition.
Yeah, we talked about it with Succession and the introduction of Alexander Skarsgård late into that show's third season. It was like, he felt like a character that fit right in with the crowd, with this whole cast.
Yeah. That was our thoughts on Avatar. Last episode, book two. Yeah, one more book left.
Cinema.
One more book left. We're going to be doing that next Saturday. There.
I was hyped watching I was so into watching the show that I kind of accidentally ended up almost halfway through book three watching it.
Wow. Yeah. It's a good binge for sure. You'll definitely go from episode to episode there with this show. Just watching it. So yeah, we got one more book left. Sad. three books of the show. Very sad.
But... yeah, sad. Hey, but the real Avatar, The Last Airbender, was the friends we made along the way.
Very true there. Does it make you want to go back watch Legend of Korra again after this? Maybe go.
I really remember loving that first season of Legend of Korra, and kind of, you know, lukewarm on book two of that show, but really digging what they did with book three and four.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, tell us everything to people. All right.
Cinema, peak television. Beautiful, beautiful cinema.